This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Salatu wassalamu ala Rasulillah. Wa la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. In the name of God, the Merciful, the Compassionate, prayers and peace be upon all of the prophets and upon our messenger, Prophet Muhammad. First of all, I want to say that one of the benefits for me about hearing what I just heard from somebody of not considerably, but an older age than I'm at, and more life experience and more teaching experience, can come to the conclusions that I came to, which makes me realize that I might not be crazy after all. And that in itself, I think, is one of the benefits of hearing an alternative perspective, is that what you surprisingly find is that there are actually many people out there that are having these same inklings. Something's wrong. Something's wrong with the present situation, the condition that we're in. And I think the primary reason for that is the extraordinary factor that is never placed into their equation, which is the human soul. This is not in the social engineer's equation. And I think the thing that sums it up best, there was a book written by a man named Crosby about his basic thesis was that the incredible control that has taken place in the last 500 years is based on the ability to measure things. That human beings have obtained a power of measurement. They can measure the air. They can measure the ocean. They can measure the stratosphere. And measurement gives you power. In fact, the Arabic word to measure and to have power is the same word. But one of the verses in the Quran says, مَا قَدُّرُ اللَّهَ حَقَّ قَدْرِهِ. They didn't measure God. They didn't measure God. He's not in the equation. And one of the things that we see that is so prominent in modern society is the attempt to remove the sacred, whether it be Christian sanctity, whether it be Islamic, whether it be any type of vision of a sacred world. It is removed, and when it is included, it's included in a way that takes the teeth out of it. It's included in a way that makes it an object of study, as in anthropology. We can look at the quaint natives, the quaint beliefs that they held. I took a course in the university called Magic, Religion, and Science. And you can see from the order where they were taking you. In other words, we lived in a magical period where people believed that there were gods up on Mount Olympus and they did extraordinary things. And then we moved to the religious period, a little more rationalism, introducing elements that the intellect could share, but still retaining fragments of that previous period, the magical period. So the belief in angels, despite the fact that every culture on this planet has some concept of the angelic realm. Coincidence. That every culture on this planet has some concept of the demonic realm. And every traditional culture on this planet has some concept of the sacred realm. But these are our remnants. And then the religious period was superseded by the rational scientific period. And then the religious person becomes irrational. As if irrationality was not part of the human makeup. Human beings have irrational elements. Why do you fall in love? Is there anything rational about falling in love, and yet a large part of my life has been affected by the fact that I fell in love with a woman. And it was a completely irrational event. I couldn't tell you why it happened. I couldn't even tell you how it happened. But it happened, and I've got some children running around as a result. It was irrational. But it was one of the best things that I ever did. So we do irrational things, and we shouldn't be ashamed of those irrational things that we do if there's some type of satisfaction that comes out of it. If there's some meaningful event, if there's some purpose, if it fulfills something necessary to our humanity, to our being, then we cannot say it's irrational. But what becomes irrational is a society that claims to be the most rational society on the planet, and yet it has the most irrational premises at its foundation. The premise that human beings can be controlled. The human being is a loose cannon on this planet. And we have to thank God for that. The human being is unpredictable. The human being will do things because he's told he can't do them, because it's impossible. And sometimes, because he was told he can't do it, he does something extraordinary, or she does something extraordinary that changes the world for the better, and sometimes for the worse, and that's being human as well. The ability to make human mistakes. There are people now who would say, what do? We've got this system. What John Taylor Gatto just said, it would seem as he's saying, throw the whole thing out. And we're told there's no turning back the clock. You can't go against progress. There are people that will say that. They'll say, this is human progress. You can't go against progress. And yet, one has to question the intelligence of somebody who recognizes that they've made a wrong turn down the wrong road and it's taking them to the wrong destination, and they see a sign. You see, you're going to a place called Paradise, South Dakota. And you turn on the wrong fork and suddenly it says, Hell, Arizona. You have to question the sanity of that person to not turn his car around and head back to where he made that mistake. Because that's a sign of intelligence to make a mistake and to rectify the mistake that you've made. And if you can't do that, then you're stupid. And those are the people that are supposed to get the F's. Really, we have to question a society now of lemmings headed for a precipice, and nobody is saying stop. And the people that are saying stop are called radicals, are called extremists. A lot of people don't realize that some of the greatest, most celebrated people in these so-called universities, these higher centers of learning, were radicals in their time. Some of them were killed because of their ideas, burnt at the stake, put under house arrest. And then we can honor them. Like they used to say, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. That's what the Americans used to say, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. Well, now you can have Hollywood films in which Geronimo's the hero. He's the hero. The bad guys are these stupid white guys. We can do that now, but woe unto Geronimo when he was calling his people to rebel against control. A free people. A free people. Look at the Southwestern Indians. I want to take one example, the Anasazi Indians. They lived in a place, there's a place now called Chaco Canyon. Chaco Canyon, nobody knows what it is. But there was a woman, she's an anthropologist, who also happened to be an astronomer. And she was one day examining some glyphs up on a hill, on a rock, a mesa, that overlooked this site of these Native Americans. They weren't called Native Americans when they were living there. They got that title later. I've never understood why the Aboriginal peoples of America have accepted that idea of being a Native American. And some haven't, but some do, and it always intrigued me that. But they obviously weren't called that then. This woman was up on this rock, and she was looking at this glyph. It was a circle, and it had a spiral that looked oddly enough like what we now know as a galaxy. Galaxies are spirals. You see these pictures from the Hubble telescopes of these spirals, and you wonder about order. Why is it a spiral? I mean, why do you see that in a seashell? That same spiral down here on planet Earth. What is that in nature? The secularist word for the divine. What is it that in nature that likes spirals? In fact, our whole bodies are spirals. It's called a double helix. It's everywhere. So she was looking at this, and suddenly there was a flash of light that went right through this spiral from the rock. And she looked back, and there was a slight sliver in rocks that had been placed there, and she thought, what's today? And she realized it was the equinox. And she realized that she was actually seeing the zenith point. And she said, is this some kind of astronomical glyph? So she began to study it, no longer as an anthropologist, but now as an astronomer, which is, we have to ask, how do these coincidences happen? You have to wonder. I mean, one of the fascinating things for me in my travels around the world is to ponder the fact that you've got 6 billion people, according to the control paradigm's latest estimate. I don't know. Who knows? Has anybody gone and counted 6 billion people? But anyway, they extrapolate somehow in that mystical science called statistics, which I actually got an A in, and I can't remember a whole lot. I remembered a bell curve and a few other things about that, but which is part of the plan. You can take those classes, do very well in them, and they don't serve you very well later on down the road. So 6 billion people, each one of them has a bestseller if they could just write it down in good language. Every single person on this planet that's reached any age of maturity has a best-selling novel of their life if they could just write it down in good language. And the amazing thing about it is those other 5,900,000,000 or 99, whatever. Those other, they're all in that novel somehow. They're either supporting actors, or small-time parts, or extras. And each one of them has that going on. In other words, we have a cosmic event of incredible complexity going on here, which is the fact that each one of you is the center of the universe. Each human being in this room is the center of the universe. And right now, I just happen to be part of your experience. Each one of you. I'm just part of your experience. I'm going to leave and you go back to your lives. And hopefully they're changed for the better a little bit, or we've learned something, or we go out to make some changes. But we have an extraordinary event going on here, and it took place in that moment, in that mesa, where this woman, an astronomer who happened to be a anthropologist studying these people, saw this flash of light. She happened to be up there at the right time in the right place, and she had the right tools to understand what she had just witnessed. So they began to study this Chaco Canyon.
as an astronomical site. And what they found out was the entire place was aligned, not just to the sunrise and the sunset, to the equinox. The shadows all reached certain corners in this building. And the moonrise, and there was the glyph work to determine moonrise and sunrise, to determine moonset and sunset at different times of the year. And one of the equations would take 18 years to work out. These were ignorant Native Americans. Ignorant Native Americans, savages. Savages. So they asked these anthropologists to say, what was this place? What did it mean? They're saying, well, we don't really know. We don't know what it was, but they definitely knew something amazing. They had very high astronomical and geometrical sciences to work all of this out. They asked a Native American from the Hopi Indians, no degree, no diploma, had, in fact, they just said Native American. That was his qualifications to be interviewed. And he was a simple-looking guy there. They asked him, what do you think this place was? He said, you know what this place was? He said, these people were people that looked into the heavens and they saw order. And they wanted to bring a portion of that order down to earth. That's what they saw. They looked up into the heavens and saw order. We used to say in this culture, before it was taken over, as in heaven, as above, so below. As above, so below. The idea that we live in an orderly universe, an ethical universe. One of my favorite statements ever by a theologian in the history of theology is Kierkegaard's statement, in which he said, if every human being on earth was led into heaven and only one man was condemned to hell and I was that man, then from the depths of the abyss of hell, I would declare the eternal justice of God. That's what these people were looking at. They were looking at a just universe, a universe of purpose. Not an eloquent dance to nowhere as a leading anthropologist at Harvard University called Life on Earth. An eloquent dance to nowhere. A meaningless, random event of extraordinarily complex coincidences. Billions of them that happened to come together at the right time in the right moment to make this event. Why is there something as opposed to nothing? I was in an observatory, and I took my boys to see this planetary. It was at a planetarium, and you saw the stars, and we looked up at this dome. And here's how it began. Suddenly there was just a flash. And suddenly you were in this, all those swirls again. And the man said, in the beginning there was the Big Bang. That's literally what he said. The Big Bang didn't happen in any one place. It happened everywhere at the same time. And you know what my boys said? Subhanallah. Because they knew who did that. Children know that. One of the things Fakhruddin al-Razi said, if you take a rock and you look at a two-year-old and you hide behind a wall and you throw the rock over his head, the two-year-old will turn around. And if he can't walk, he'll crawl over to investigate where the rock came from. Why can't that two-year-old just believe it popped out of nowhere? Why can't it do that? Why can't that two-year-old just simply believe that it popped out of nowhere? Because inherent in human nature is the belief that there for every effect, there is a cause. For every effect, there is a cause. And it starts right from the beginning. And we're told that there was no cause. We're told everything on this planet has a cause except the universe. There was no cause. Everything else has a material cause. You study any of the physical sciences and they'll tell you there was a cause. They'll even, if you study physiology, they'll tell you about form and function. That every single thing in your body is designed for a function. The form is actually designed for the function. And they talk about design. They use that word. And I always wondered about that because I would ask them, who's the designer? Natural selection. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about this character? Because there's intelligent design. So is natural selection intelligent? Well, he works a lot at it. He makes a lot of mistakes. But he improves each time. Well, that's intelligence. I mean, that's a lot more intelligent than a lot of human beings that I know. Right? Because Einstein said the definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. Which is what we call school reform. Really, that's what it is. It's school reform. So we want to look up at the stars again. They've done their best to take them out of the sky. They keep artificial lights in California. Fortunately, the power, we're losing it all. So one day the San Franciscans are going to walk out and say, my God, who created that? They haven't seen the heavens in at least 30 or 40 years. There's kids there that don't even know that there's stars up there. And they don't know that the sun shows up every morning. There's a lot of these people that are so disconnected to this universe that they're not even aware that there's a thing called the solar system. Again, a system. You wonder about that. System. That's an engineer's term. It's systems. Who makes systems? You can't blame that one on natural selection. The solar system. Because natural selection is working here on Earth. Who got that one going, right? I mean, really, there's questions here to be asked. These are called the big questions, but they're left out of those multiple choice tests. Somebody once had this guy, he's called the telephone man, and this is a true story. He was a telephone man in a yellow book, and I was in a bookstore, Cody's bookstore in Berkeley. And he came up to me, and there was a camera there. And he said, I'm the telephone book, and I can help you find what you're looking for. And apparently it's a commercial, and you get $50 just for doing it. So he asked me, what are you looking for? And I said, actually, I was in this section. It's called phenomenology. And I don't think it's in the phone book. And he said, no, you'd be surprised. I'm really serious. He said, you'd be surprised. He's looking it up. How do you spell that? P-H-E. He looked it up. He said, it's not in here. And I said, you know, God's not in there. Right? God's not in there. I mean, the big things aren't in the phone book. You can't look them up in the phone book. And that's the truth. It doesn't have all the answers, all these manuals they give you, how to do this and how to do that. They don't teach you how to nurture your soul. But they're very good at destroying the soul. And what we need to do as a community, all of us together, is we need to wage, I don't want to use war, because when Muslims say war, they get in trouble. But we need to wage, I'll use Brian Wilson's term, we need to wage unconditional peace. Against a culture controlled by a handful of people, and people say, well, that's that. Are you saying there's a conspiracy? I'm saying that you don't hang around long enough after the movie to read the credits. There's no conspiracy about who made the film. You just saw a film, and that film had an agenda. And if you didn't stay long enough, you'll often miss what the agenda was. For instance, there was a film called Executive Decision, with Steven Seagal and Kirk something or other and a whole bunch of other famous people that people go and see just because their names are in there. They don't care what the movie's about, but they go to see those people. This film was about terrorists, Muslim terrorists, taking over an airplane. And interestingly enough, the white guy who goes to save the plane is using a plane that can latch onto another plane, which was actually a Pentagon project that was canned by Congress. And the Pentagon was upset about this. So he latches onto the plane, and then a whole bunch of minorities are under his command, and they go in to take over and get these Arabs out of there who are going to blow up the entire East Coast. How they got that baggage onto that plane is another story. But that's Hollywood. So the interesting thing about this is if you stayed till the end of the credits, at the very end, not at the beginning, after Steven Seagal and all those characters and the producer and this, they said, we'd like to thank the United States Air Force. We'd like to thank the United States Navy. We'd like to thank the Secretary of Defense for making this film possible. That's an agenda. And those people who didn't stay long enough to see the credits don't realize that they were being affected by what they saw. There's propaganda there. You can, everything that John Taylor Gatto told you, you can find in public libraries, the Library of Congress, or you can get it through interlibrary loan. Some of them you'll have a very hard time finding, and I'm really serious about this. I tried to find a book called The Evil Eye. It took me 2 years. And the book was about a lot of studies that were done about television. This man's premise was that he felt that there was a lot of brain mind control going on in television. But it's a fascinating book to see the studies of what they knew back in the 50s about the severe effects that television were having on people. So where do we go beyond schooling? What do we do as people? We are human beings here together in this auditorium. And we're here because we have a sense, I hope, of the importance of what we have going on here. We're human beings. Some of us have children. I have children. I'm concerned about my children. I'm concerned about the world they're growing up in. I'm concerned about the commodification of human beings. I'm concerned about human resources. I don't like, one of these guys that went and shot this place up, he killed all these people in the human resource office. Because they wouldn't give him a month in advance pay so that he could buy Christmas presents for his children. Now, to imagine the stress that this man was under to actually, because he was denied that month in advance pay by the human resources, to go and do something that tragic, because it is tragic, but the entire system is tragic. What produced that man is tragic. I lived in the Saharan desert. They don't have mass murderers. They don't have children shooting their fathers. They don't have children going to school and shooting their fellow children. They wouldn't even think of it. It wouldn't even occur to their mind or their heart. They're not more human than we are. They're not less human than we are. They're human beings, but they're in an environment in which their minds have not been manipulated and controlled to the degree to which they're going berserk. They're running amok. Look at this last killing. And I have a map here of the school killings, which is interesting because they're all over the country. I mean, it's amazing how they're just, you know, one happens here, then here, and then here. And these are tragic events beyond belief. But if you look at these characters, when you see their pictures, the same glazed look in the eye. Those boys, you saw that picture of that boy in San Diego? He doesn't know what he did. He doesn't know why he did it. Our Prophet Muhammad said one of the signs of the end of time. He said, يَأْتِ عَلَى النَّاسِ زَمَانٍ لَا يَدْرِي الْقَاتِلُ لِمَا قَتَلْ وَلَا الْمَقْتُولُ لِمَا قُتِلَ. The killer will not know why he's killing, and the one being killed will not know why he is being killed. It's a hadith in Sahih Muslim. The killer will not know why he's killing. And the one being killed will not know why he's being killed. What is going on? What has brought us to that point? We have lost community. We've lost family. These things have been taken away from people, and they weren't taken with ease. People fought. Read history. Read what happened 100 years ago in the United States of America. What the farmers did. Now you look at the farms in America, the highest rate of suicide is in farmers in the United States of America. They're committing suicide. When I was a child, we used to sing a song. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on his farm he had a cow, E-I-E-I-O. And what did the cow do? It went moo moo. Old MacDonald had his farm taken away from him because he couldn't pay the bank. His cow doesn't go moo moo anymore because he's got foot and mouth disease or mad cow's disease. Really? And old McDonald's has been replaced by McDonald's. That's who replaced him. That's who bought the family farm. And he's going to genetically alter the corn that you're eating. He's going to genetically alter the food that you're eating. In the health food stores in the United States, they have to put out things that say, we cannot guarantee the absence of genetically modified food in our foods. And if you have an ounce of intelligence to think that this ignoramus that we call Homo sapien can improve on perfection, can improve on the God-given seed, the seed of life. If you believe that man, this is called hubris in the ancient Greeks, this is what destroys man, is his arrogance, his belief that he can do things that he is not qualified to do, and the sign of an intelligent man is to know his limits. To know his limits. Really, we have to question what is going on out there, and our silence is complicity. The silent one is complicit in the crime. If you stand by and watch a crime happening, you're part of that crime. You're aiding and abetting that crime if you don't do something about it. The Arabs say, the hadith says, As-sukut 'alamatu ridha. Silence is the sign of contentment. Silence is the sign of contentment. We should be standing up. The Europeans went out and marched in large numbers to prevent genetically modified food. And yet, no, these things, people aren't even debating these things because we have an educational system that makes us docile, that makes us think, like the John Taylor Gatto said, it makes people accept orders even if they're stupid. It makes them accept. There's people that, there was an old lady in England, and she was pouring tea. She had her cream there. And as she was pouring it, she said, you know, something very strange about this cream. When I was young, I remember cream going off really fast. But this cream doesn't go off anymore. It'll last 2 weeks. My grandfather said, he had an orchard. And he used to tell us, if we found a worm in the apple, he said, I wouldn't eat an apple a worm wouldn't eat. Seriously, think about that, people. I don't want to eat a tomato that doesn't bruise. You go into supermarkets now and you think you're in a science fiction movie. The colors are different. Where are they getting apples like that? I don't remember apples that look like that. I didn't remember strawberries like that. Seriously, you think this is what's happening. You're watching this thing happening before your eyes. We need to wake up and take our lives back. And the first thing that you can do, the most empowering thing that you can do, is take your children out of this system. Protect them at least for the first 10 years. At least for 10 years. Don't be afraid to educate them in your homes. You can do it, and they'll do it themselves. And they will surprise you at how intelligent they are. And you'll see that light in their eyes, it won't go out after 2 or 3 years of public schooling. It'll still be there, that bright eye. You'll see that child still loves you. It isn't listening to the children at school telling them how much they hate their parents. And there are some children in school that they do hate their parents. They beat their children. They do terrible things to their children. And your children are listening to that. And with peer pressure, they start hating their parents. They start contributing to the dialogue. My mom's so stupid. My dad's so stupid. You know what he made me do? Children in West Africa don't do that. They couldn't imagine saying that their parent was stupid. A child couldn't imagine that. The Arabian prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, once said to his companions, never curse your parents. And they said, Ya Rasulullah, how could we curse our parents? It wasn't even in their frame of reference. Now look at the subtlety of this meaning. He said, by cursing another man's parents, you cause them to curse your parents. So don't curse another man's parents. But look how he began it. Don't curse your parents. By cursing another man's parents, you cause them to curse your parents. Like these poor, unguided Afghani people that just blew up this Buddha that's been there for 1,500 years. The greatest Muslims in the history of Islam were living in Afghanistan. And before that, some of the greatest Buddhists. Balkh was a center of Buddhist learning. Many of those scholars became Muslims and actually contributed to the development of Islamic logic. The greatest scholars never said, go blow up those statues of Buddha. But what the press will not tell you is the reason, how, what brought that about. Like those companions who asked, how could we curse our parents? How did that Buddha get destroyed? It got destroyed because for 20 years, the Afghani people have lived under the tyranny of being victims of a Cold War game played between two giants called America and Russia. A peaceful people, a proud people, a people of great dignity, a people of great strength, a people that are praised in the literature of the English for their tenacity. One of the prime ministers said in Parliament, how can we defeat a people? Speaking of the Afghanis, when they look down our barrels, they see the gates of paradise. How do we defeat those people? The midwife, an educated Afghani woman, a physician, Arifa Azad, a beautiful Afghani woman, educated, erudite, knew her poetry, knew her culture, was proud to be an Afghani. She was the obstetrician of my family. She couldn't go back to her country. She came to this country to learn medicine, to go back and practice medicine in her country, and the war broke out. She was not ashamed of her people. She was proud of her people. She was a literate person. People don't talk about that because history is in a vacuum. History is what CNN tells you. That's not history. That's what happened yesterday or today, whatever the latest headline news is. It's told without any context. It's told without any ability for people to analyze and look at what's happened. This is what people are given. Read history. Really, look back. All of this is new. If you want to know a homeschool, I'll give you a great historical example of somebody who was homeschooled. A man named Ali ibn Abi Talib. He was the Khalifa, the Caliph. He was the fourth Caliph. He was a brilliant man. He was a genius. He grew up in the house of the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He never went a day in school. He never spent a day in school. Not one day, because he was in the greatest school, the school of the Prophet Muhammad. That's the sunnah for Muslims. Sunnah is the tradition of their prophet. Their prophet was a homeschooler. He schooled his children, Fatima. When the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was 12 years old, imagine this. He took a trip with his uncle to Syria of a month. a commerce trip, a trip as a merchant, 12 years old. And look at our 12-year-olds today. Look at them. It's disgraceful. It's disgraceful, really. Look at these poor kids, and they're victims, and you have to see them as victims. And we're complicit in the crime that was done against them because we're more busy making a living and we've forgotten we've already been given a life. We've been given a life by God. And your children are your wealth. Al-malu wal-banun, zinatul hayat ad-dunya. Children, wealth and children are the ornaments, the embellishments of life on earth. But to sacrifice your children for your wealth, if I had to give up one of the two, I know which one I'd give up. And I don't have that much to give up, so it's a lot easier choice than it is for some people out there. We need to retake our communities, really. You need to stop buying these at these corporate... Really, don't buy from them. Don't wear the logos. Don't wear the Nike Swish. Why should you give them free advertisement if they're not going to pay you? Seriously, why advertise for them? Take them off their clothes or don't buy their clothes. Make your own clothes. People used to make their own clothes. You can buy cloth. Go buy cloth. Learn how to sew. Sewing is a good thing to learn how to do. Well, I'm going to feel stupid walking around in homemade clothes. Well, who do you think made you feel stupid? The same people trying to sell you those clothes that they made that look a lot stupider than homemade clothes. We've got kids walking with pants halfway down their bottoms with shoes that are so big. Some of these young girls walking around, my God, how do they walk? And we know it's bad for their spines. Really, all of this is madness. You're not the mad one. But if you have enough sense of who you are and whose you are, you have some individuality, you have some spine, you have some courage to be different. It takes courage to be different. People ask me, every time they say, what about your children being homeschooled? What about socialization? I said, that's why we're homeschooling. For God's sakes, get that through your brains. That's why I'm homeschooling. I don't want them socialized into that madness. It amazes me, that question always comes. What about so every single person I've ever said, that's it. I don't want my children, I look out there, I see these kids the same age, they scare me. When I was a little kid, and I did some Huckleberry Finn things that I'm probably a little ashamed of, but when I was a little kid, if an adult looked at me with any type of disdain, I felt fear. I'll tell you something, I feel fear looking at these 8-year-olds. I really do. And one of them broke a bottle in front of my house, and I went outside and I said to him, hey, excuse me, what are you doing? He said, what's it to you, man? This kid was 10 years old. If I had said that when I was 10 years old in Mill Valley, California, that man would have taken off his belt and whipped me. And my mother would have thanked him for doing that. It wasn't called child abuse in those days. Al Capone, one of the worst criminals in the history of America, according to the history books, was thrown out of school when he was 12 years old for punching a teacher in the mouth. Al Capone. He didn't bring a knife to school and knife his teacher. He didn't shoot him. He punched him in the mouth, and he was the worst kid on the block. Al Capone went on to have an extraordinary career in crime. But he was a clever fellow. People don't realize that Al Capone probably did more for the people of Chicago than most of the multinational corporations that are centered in Chicago. He opened up soup kitchens and fed poor people that didn't. They loved him, Al Capone. You know why they got angry at him? Poor old Al, right? You know why they got angry at him? They loved Al. They really did. You can read the history. Al Capone, at his trial, when they mentioned that he actually wore, they had somebody up there who made his underwear. Homemade underwear. Al Capone was a rich guy. He wore homemade clothes. That's what rich people do. They don't. You think rich people are buying that stuff at the Gap? Rich people have, they pay somebody to make their own clothes. They eat organic produce, right? Really, they do. They eat from homemade bowls. They don't buy mass-produced stuff. You can make your own bowls. Rich people, they're too busy ruining the world to make their own bowls, so they pay other people to make their own bowls. But the point is, they don't eat from mass-produced things. The wealthiest people don't. They really don't. Al Capone, when it was mentioned that he wore silk underwear, blushed. That's what the reporter said. In other words, the man had some shame in his heart. We didn't even see Clinton blush. The president of the United States, when he lied to the American people, didn't even blush. Al Capone blushed because his underwear was mentioned. When Clinton's private parts were mentioned, not his underwear, mind you, his private parts, the man didn't blush. What does that tell you about Al Capone and the President of the United States? Well, I'll tell you something. It tells me that I think Al Capone was probably a better person. Really, I think he probably had something in his heart that gave him a sense of shame, despite the fact he was a horrific human being. The reason the Chicago people went against Al Capone is because he killed 7 men, allegedly. It wasn't the killing of the gangsters. They could care less. You know what really upset them? He had his cronies dress as policemen. That's where Al went too far. That's what really troubled them. The idea of a police officer being a mafioso. In other words, it was too much, even for the people of Chicago. 7 people. And the people of Chicago were up in arms. We have 7 people being killed every hour in Chicago now. Really? I mean, look what's going on out there. And people they're no longer shocked at these things. My mother told me, who grew up in the 1930s in San Francisco, California, that if a person died, it was front page news for at least a month. If a person was killed, murdered, it was front page news for at least a month. Why have we allowed this to happen? Really, something very, very wrong has happened, and what it is that your souls are dying. We're literally dying of suffocation, spiritual suffocation. Our souls are dying. And before the lights are out completely, I would advise all of you to reject this and to commit your lives to turning the tide. Because the danger of people that can see things another way and have the courage and the motivation to set out to change those is that very often they succeed. That's why those people are dangerous. People that can see things the way they should be and not the way they are. Those people are dangerous people. And I hope I'm a dangerous man. I really do. I hope I'm a dangerous man, and I hope all of you will commit to being dangerous people. A danger to what's wrong out there. A danger to what is wrong out there. And I'll tell you something, you can begin it. If you look in here, if the average person in here even has 2 children, and they raise them to break the cycle, to be different, to reject it, that can change the history of Toronto. Really, it can change the history of Toronto, and Toronto can change the history of Canada. And this is the way it begins. It begins with an understanding of the power of one, because one is the greatest number. It is the greatest number. It's God's number. It's a powerful number, and an idea can change hearts. An idea can change hearts, and if an idea is right and it's true, it should change hearts. And if it's not, it shouldn't. But we're being bombarded by people who have the power now to inflict on us ideas that are dangerous to our hearts. And they're doing it to our children. So my advice to all of you, is to turn off your commercial televisions. This is a first and major step in changing the conditions of your households. Turn off your, and this is an act of courage. It's an act of courage. It's the coward that allows others to amuse himself, you see. And I agree wholeheartedly. I once heard somebody say that they'd never been bored in their life. And it always troubled them when they heard people say, I'm bored. Children learn boredom. I've never seen my children bored. I've never heard them say, I'm bored. I haven't heard that. I haven't seen that. Let them run around and do what they want. You put them in a classroom for 8 hours a day in training and preparation to living a life of sitting behind a computer terminal for 8 hours a day, being bored stiff. Right? Really? And think that this is life. No, there are alternatives out there, people. Be creative. Be creative. There's alternatives. It doesn't have to be this way. And if that's the only message that you take from tonight, it's enough. It does not have to be this way. We have the power and the ability to change, and we have to do that. We have to change. And we have to listen to our hearts. Our prophet, peace be upon him, said, listen and take advice from your heart, even if others give you advice. What is your heart telling you about what you see out there? If it's not telling you that something's seriously wrong, then as a cardiologist, I would say your heart's dead. I'm not a cardiologist, I'm actually a cardiac nurse. So I spend a lot of time with cardiologists, and a cardiologist will tell you your heart's dead if it's not registering any movement. If there's nothing moving in the heart, it's dead. The physical heart and the spiritual heart. And if your heart is dead, then know, like the Quran says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحْيَى الْأَرْضَ بَعْدَ مَوْتِهَا. God brings life to the earth after its death. And our scholars say the earth here also means the human heart. Our children's hearts can be brought back to life. It's going to take some serious measures. Resuscitation, sometimes defibrillation. But it can be done. They can be brought back to life because humans are amazing. They have awakenings. I had a car accident. That's what brought me out of a sleep that I was in. I had a very powerful car accident. And I was confronted with my own mortality. And that's why they don't want to tell you about death. They don't want to let you think about death. They want to fill your lives with empty songs. They'll replace real friends for friends on a TV sitcom that know nothing about you. They don't care whether you live or die. If you want to know if you live in a community, then somebody said the best way to assess that is ask yourself, will the person at the grocery store realize, if you happen to drop dead today, that you're no longer buying groceries there? That's how you know if you have any community whatsoever. Will the person that you buy gas from, will the person that does this or that for you, will they even remember that you were a person in their life? Because that's what's been taken away from people. We need community. We need community. We are communal beings. We're beings of community. Every religious tradition, the Sangha of the Buddhists, the Ummah of the Muslims, the Ecclesia of the Christians, every religious tradition has a sense of community, of bringing people together. And we're difficult to be with each other. You have to set aside differences sometimes. We're hard to be together. That's part of being human. It's learning to deal with that obstinate person over there and that contrarian over there. And you could be the contrarian yourself. And they're having a hard time dealing with you. But that's what life is about. It's about setting aside differences for a greater good. Coming together, listening to each other. We were at a poetry recital in New Mexico, and we had a spectacular night. Everybody read a poem, and we had a beautiful night at Darul Islam with all these teachers. And when we finished, I said that I would just like to have a moment of silence, I think, or a prayer for all those people out there watching television right now who are deprived of the joy of human companionship, of sharing poems together, of sharing thoughts together. And you know what? A man came up to me after he was a teacher, and he was almost in tears. He said to me, when you said that, I just realized something. I've been spending the last 20 years of my life in front of a TV set every night, and this is the best time that I've had. And it's not, don't let it happen at Borders. Don't let them co-opt that. Because they'll do it. They'll tell you, come down and have a poetry thing, and we'll even give you Borders poetry thing, and you can advertise us on the thing. Make your own coffee houses. Really, Be people of creativity. Be people of creativity. And the thing I'll end on, two notes. One is, Don Taylor Gatto said they want you to be docile. They want you to obey orders. And it reminded me of a hadith of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in which a group of men went out, and he put one of the men as an emir over the others, which is a leader on this journey. And this man, he's probably a humorous fellow, he told his companions, see that fire? I'm commanding you to jump into the fire. And they looked at each other and they said, the whole reason we became Muslims was to save ourselves from the fire. So we're not going to do it. He said, I'm the emir, I'm the ruler. They said, well, let's go back and ask the Prophet of God. So they went back to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and they told him the story, and he said, لَا طَعَتِ لِي مَخْلُوقٍ فِي مَعْصِيَةِ الْخَالِقِ. Never obey a creature if it means disobeying the Creator. Never obey a creature if it means disobeying the Creator. And I would put forth that we are in gross disobedience of natural laws, laws that are part of nature. We're in a state of disobedience and we need to atone. Really, we need to redeem ourselves. All of these things that are happening on this planet, I believe that we live in a moral universe, that there's reasons these things are happening. There's reasons why the ozone has a hole in it. There's reasons why the weather is no longer like it used to be. There's reasons why you don't see birds and bees anymore in many parts of our lands. There's reasons why our forests are disappearing. There's reason why our lakes are poison and toxic. There's reason why our food now kills 20,000 people in the United States every year. 20,000 people. More than was killed in a year in Vietnam, in their own war statistics, are dying from the food they're eating. There's reasons for all these things, because we're out of balance and we've forgotten what the heavens are. The heavens are order, and we need to bring that order down here. And there are many ways to do that. I'm a Muslim and I'm committed to Islam, but there's people in here that have their wisdom traditions. And if those wisdom traditions are working for them, then the Quran says, يَا أَهْلَ الْكِتَابِ لَسْتُمْ عَلَى شَيْحْ حَتَّى تُقِيمُوا التَّوْرَةُ وَالْإِنْجِيلِ. Oh, people of the book, you're not on anything until you practice your Torah, until you practice your gospel. Guidance has been given to humanity. Really, guidance has been given. And everybody agrees on certain basic things except the control paradigm out there. They're the only ones that don't agree. And the majority of people in Canada and America, the majority of people, according to the dominant paradigm statistics, believe in God, believe in an afterlife. So why aren't these things ever even discussed in our public schools? Why aren't they even discussed? So my advice to all of you really is, don't obey any creatures if it means disobeying your Creator. And if you want to know what disobedience to your Creator is, the Prophet said, disobedience to your Creator is what doesn't feel right in your heart. Listen to your heart. Listen to your heart. I thank you very much and apologize for going on a little longer than I probably should have. And I hope that you do what the Quran tells you to do, whether you're a Christian or a Jew or a Buddhist or a Muslim. The Quran gives a beautiful piece of advice, and it applies to every human being. الَّذِينَ يَسْتَمِعُونَ الْقَوْلَ فَيَتَّبِعُونَ أَحْسَنَهُ. Those who listen to what's been said, and they follow the best of it. Thank you very much.